get things underway, though, by welcoming back to the show a guest who was with us just about a year ago, and it could not be more timely to visit with us today. He's the author of a wonderful book entitled ESPN, The Making of a Sports Media Empire. Travis Vogan joins us this afternoon. Travis, welcome back.
Thanks, Rich.
Great to have you back on the program with us, and in light of all that's happened at ESPN, this was not a big surprise to anybody other than perhaps the scope of the layoffs there. What has changed for them? Because you did such great research on how they built that empire. What has put that empire in a different position?
Well, I think that if you wanted to reduce it to one word, it would be digital. And ESPN has massive budgets that it uses to secure rights contracts for really expensive sports, the NFL, the NBA, the Major League Baseball, etc. And the way that it's been paying for those big contracts, and we're talking billions of dollars, is through rights fees that cable subscribers pay. And cable subscribers pay a certain amount per subscriber to ESPN, or ESPN charges that amount. And so ESPN, because it's such a powerful cable outlet, has been able to charge way more than any other cable channel. And so just to give you an illustration, in 2017, ESPN's charging over $7 per subscriber. So everybody who has a cable subscription is paying $7 a month for ESPN. The next most expensive channel is TNT, which is just over a dollar. So to give you a sense of kind of the scope there. Now, what's been happening is that people who don't watch ESPN are kind of fed up with having to pay that much money. You know, my aunt, who doesn't care at all about sports, is paying $7+ for ESPN, another, you know, close to a dollar for ESPN2, et cetera. And there are options now for these consumers to go to digital streaming services and et cetera that are less expensive than cable channels. And this is obviously having a pretty significant impact on ESPN's bottom line, and they're being forced to adjust in all sorts of ways, both with, you know, their budgets and also the kinds of content they're...
Here we go.
Well, yeah, we were saying that one of the things that seems to happen to ESPN is they got caught between their original mission of showing sports and all the shows that they added, and that so many of those shows are no longer relevant because, you mentioned, the digital age, you can get the information right away. I don't have to stay up to see the highlights on SportsCenter.
Sure.
Was that as big a goof as it was to have so much high-priced talent on the roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough to reduce it to, you know, a particular thing, but I think that there was this kind of grab for talent, and ESPN has spent an awful lot on securing some of these high-profile people. And one of the things that's happening with these layoffs is a lot of people were about to come up for renegotiation for their contracts. And so this provided, I guess, a convenient time for ESPN to get rid of some of these folks rather than have to renegotiate. And they got rid of some pretty prominent people: Ed Werder, Jeanette Howard, Trent Dilfer, Andy Katz, Jason Stark. I mean, these are some pretty big stars, you know, not of the Scott Van Pelt or Stephen A. Smith kind of stature, or Hannah Storm, but I mean, these are pretty big figures who are kind of reliable voices and good journalists in a lot of ways.
No, I was just going to say, it's also a different model, too, in terms of what viewers are looking for. And games continue to be the one thing that they can draw a big audience for. But youngsters, millennials, are less likely than those before them to watch a SportsCenter type of show, a highlight show, because they can get that digitally so much more quickly. And the older folks don't seem to be inclined to wrap their arms around the embrace debate type of shows.
Sure. And it's interesting. It's kind of history repeating itself, because one of the things that brought network sports, or forced network sports to reimagine what it was doing, was cable TV coming in and showing highlights immediately after games and right at night with SportsCenter, rather than waiting for the nightly news or whatever. And now what we're getting is the sort of instantaneous highlights that are being cut and put online immediately after they occur, not just after the game. And so cable sports is having to deal with some of the same issues that network sports were dealing with, but in a much more condensed and tightened kind of framework in terms of, the distance from the game that's being represented and the highlights being produced. So it's kind of interesting to see them be put in this situation when they were putting network sports in this situation, in the 90s.
Which made me wonder whether ABC, Disney, and all those people might, in a sense, try and grab some of those games back and further diminish the role of ESPN as a way of not duplicating ad sale efforts and the like. I mean, can you see that happening, a greater consolidation of the network? I mean, we've got ESPNU, ESPN2 yeah. and 3.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Bruce. And what has actually been happening is some sports organizations are starting to go back to networks, not with the same degree that they did in the 80s or 90s, but what's happening is that cable channels like ESPN, Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports, etc., were able to pay more money precisely because of their dual revenue stream system, right, where you have advertising and then you have the subscriber fees, which is different from network television where you just have advertising. And so as these budgets are starting to dwindle a little bit, you're seeing sports leagues starting to express a preference for networks that can at the very least guarantee large audiences rather than relying on things like ESPN or on other cable outlets that are giving you smaller audiences but more money for the contract, because that money is starting to kind of dissipate.
We're talking with Travis Vogan, the author of ESPN, The Making of a Sports Media Empire. There are those who also suggest that a part of this is some sort of payback to ESPN for getting more overtly political and particularly left-wing in some of their leanings. But is there any evidence to find any truth in that?
You know, I haven't seen much. I mean, if ESPN is left-wing, it's certainly not very far to the left. It's not MSNBC, but it's also, not Fox News. I feel like they've been pretty on the center with most things that they've dealt with, and I don't really see that being that big of an issue ultimately. I think that's kind of mostly unsubstantiated. I think it would be pretty naive to say that ESPN is this kind of activist organization. I mean, look at how they deal with the NFL, for instance. They've basically been operating as the NFL's lapdog for the last 20 years. To say that that's an organization that represents the left, I think, is dubious.
Well, and let's not cry for ESPN or the parent company either, because I've seen some reports that say that's the most valuable part of the whole piece, even more valuable than the whole Disney package. And they're still bringing in a lot of money. It's just this is more of a course correction, perhaps, than anything else.
Yeah, this is it's not by any stretch the end of ESPN. It's a sort of rebooting of their strategy to fit sort of a changing market, right? We're going, as you and Bruce just mentioned, into a sports media landscape that is driven by live sports, and that's driven by digital, so clips and whatnot that are happening, immediately and that are being packaged for mobile. And so what ESPN is doing is it's investing less money into its TV programming, right? And you're seeing all of these, most of these folks are sort of TV people who show up on television giving updates, etc., and investing more in things like its Watch ESPN app, which is for subscribers. And the idea with that app is that it's going to be a digital service that is driving subscriptions to ESPN's TV service. So you're going to get some kind of enhanced access to ESPN. You're going to get access to things like ESPN films, documentaries, and all those kinds of things. And so they're kind of just pivoting more so than, throwing in the towel or anything like that. And in doing that, they're shedding a lot of high-priced talent. But it's a statement for sure, because these are people who are on the air. They've had layoffs before, and they tend to be people who we don't know, who we don't see on the air. And so I think that this particular layoff is more pronounced and more dramatic because it involves people we know as sports fans and as people who watch ESPN. But I mean, they just in late 2015 they shed, you know, I think 300 jobs. You know,
and this is about 100. This time I was also wondering if the effect of the MLB Network, the NHL Network, these kind of all league passes. For the sports fan who got ESPN originally because they could see sports that they didn't otherwise see, for me, hockey is huge. I have the hockey package, and I don't really watch ESPN much. Was that also maybe a mistake on their part to get in, trying to get into every corner of everything?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they might have overlooked the value of certain types of sports and contracts. I mean, I think that the big thing that's still, they're not struggling at all when it comes to their sort of bread and butter live sports. You know, their college basketball does great, college football does great, NFL does great, NBA does great. It's all the other stuff surrounding it, right? All of the programming surrounding it, all the ways that they support it. And that's the thing that they're kind of having to rethink, I believe, more so than just particularly what contracts they have. I think the NHL contract is probably something that ESPN would love to have, and that they'll probably have again someday, or at least try to get. But beyond just what sports they have, it's how are they going to package them, how are fans consuming them, and how are they going to kind of adjust to those sorts of needs, and those needs as they change with the media environment that's quite different from a more traditional network model. Which is really what's been guiding ESPN since, you know, the 80s when they first started getting big ticket contracts for sports like college football.
Travis Vogan is the author of ESPN, The Making of a Sports Media Empire. Travis, great talking with you again. Thanks for making time for us this afternoon.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, pleasure.
We'll see you soon.